This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
8 Jaguars, 4 weeks. Yamava Resort and Casino at San Manuel is giving away 2 Jaguars every Thursday starting January 8th. Club Serrano members, play to earn entries for your chance to win a new luxury crossover SUV. Join for free today and don't miss your chance to drive off in a Jaguar. More cars, more chances to win. Only at Yamava Resort and Casino, celebrating its 40th anniversary. You in? Details at yamava.com. Must be 21 to enter. Please gamble responsibly.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Les Kaiser, and Jonathan Green. Presented by Mosing Motor Cars. It's the fastest hour on the radio, Speed City.
Good evening, gearheads. Welcome to Speed City.
Yeah, baby.
This is John Massengill. That's Jonathan Green. You just heard in Les Kaiser.
We are all
back in the studio after spending last weekend out at Circuit of the Americas having a blast watching the United States Grand Prix.
That was the most fun Grand Prix since the first one, and that was just an emotional one.
Yeah. It was everything. The crowd was huge, and, you know, the nightly entertainment was awesome, I'll say, in both accounts. I heard there was over 117,000 for Justin Timberlake Saturday night.
Wow. I had heard some early estimates of like 90,000, which I thought was crazy high.
I saw the mayor of Speed City at Stevie Wonder.
That's only because he was dancing goofy.
You were dancing?
Me and my sister were dancing goofy.
I'm glad I missed it. Let's be blunt.
I resemble that remark.
I always do.
But did we have a blast or what, guys? I think that the
it really
race
was.
And obviously we had a lot of fun as usual, and I think the crowd did too, but the race itself, man, it was fantastic.
It was. The racing was fantastic. You know, there's still some argument if you follow some of the F1 forums about whether Max had a legitimate pass or not. So I think that's really interesting.
We should go deeper into that later, I think.
Yeah, we are going to go a lot deeper into that later. We've got some clips we're going to play, including Charlie Whiting and some others. But that was the biggest thing of the race for sure was that Verstappen pass, and whether it was legal, whether it was consistent, whether it was blah, blah, blah. So we'll talk a lot about that later on.
I'm going to say there's a lot I want to talk about that, because it's not so much the overtake, it's the way it was dealt with.
That's exactly what's
more important to me.
Exactly. And of course, so let me run down what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the USGP here in Austin that happened last week. But today's race in Mexico, we're going to go into that.
They just keep coming fast and furious.
I know, it's true. It makes you realize when you're there at the track and you see the guys starting to pack up. I mean, they tried to pack up some of our audio gear before we even went on the air.
Yeah.
I was like, hey guys, we got a race to do.
Yeah, there we go. We're not done. We haven't even started.
We wouldn't have been able to get the race out on the radio. But that's the whole idea, is that these guys are packing up everything ready to go to another city, another continent. So yeah, we hit the ground running and are in Mexico again this weekend. It was a great race this weekend, especially lap one and corner one.
Wow, it really was
one,
good.
Two, and three. I'll say it.
Well,
took
that's
all
true.
Three.
Yeah, that's true.
And I thought Matchett's comment on the NBC coverage was excellent, because he's like, "No, son, that's not what you do. Everybody's advised you not to do that, and that's exactly what you've done. You've gone against all the people's advice."
It was like his grandfather was just chastising him. It was pretty good, though. I liked it.
It was. And, you know, to me, it was racing. And I'm glad it played out the way it did as far as no penalties, and it was just racing the way it was, because there was an open shot. Hamilton shot for it, which, you know, was overly confident into it, but it didn't play out well.
Yeah.
And he paid the penalty through the race.
Well, we're going to talk a lot more about F1, but we have a special guest on the phone.
We certainly do.
And we're going to talk MotoGP first, and then we're going to come back and talk a lot about Formula One.
The fourth member of the crew, I would say.
I mean,
he's family. I mean, he's a
brother from the Australian mother.
Right, exactly. Brother from another mother. He is, of course, the world endurance champion of old. But not really. That's a bad word, because he's still as fast as he ever was. The one and only Steve Martin. Steve, I know you're on the line. How are you?
Good, guys. It's really good to catch up with you guys. It's been a while. And you know what? Just to get ready to come onto the show here, I know that you know that I've got one, Jonathan. I went out into the shed to prepare. I pulled my Mustang out, my 1965 Mustang, and I gave it a wash. So that's how I prepared for your radio show
awesome.
Today.
Awesome.
Okay, audience, this is legit. This isn't just your typical average, you know, 60s Mustangs, of which we have millions of. This is a K code. This is seriously legit 289 K code.
Hey, you'll be happy to know too, Les, that I've actually, it's been sitting in my shed for, I don't know now, 15 years, but we'll get to motorbikes in a minute, okay?
Yeah. Steve, why don't you tell people how you did this? Because I think it's a great story.
How I got my K code?
Yeah.
Well, I always had a hankering to get one. Of course, in Australia, we don't have any cool cars like that. You know, we've got the old Australian muscle cars, which are worth a lot of money now. But I always wanted a Mustang, and I just searched around. I couldn't find one here in Australia, so I took a bit of a gamble and got talking to a guy on the east coast of America, up in the north there, Massachusetts, I think. I can't remember the name of the state now, Maryland it was. That's up there, isn't it?
So, Maryland, Massachusetts. So you can be forgiven. You're from Australia. There's a long way between Perth and Adelaide.
Well, you know, Australia's big, but we've only got 7 states to remember, not, you know, 52 like you guys. So
That could actually be brought in here in years to come.
Yeah, well, anyway, I bought it sight unseen, and I did the whole thing. I got it shipped down, and when I got it down, I had to, I needed to finish it off. It wasn't fully restored, but it's fully restored now. I sent you a photo of it, Jonathan. Put it on your Facebook page and let your listeners have a look.
I will. I'll send it to Les, and he will do said thing. By the way, it does look like a doozy. It looked really good.
I know. I use it as a daily driver anyway now, because and the kids love it, because we had a little white people mover that I used to take the kids to school in, and you'd turn up at school and all the other mums and dads in their big SUVs would look down on you going, oh, gee, look at those guys. And then one day I thought, you know what, I'm going to be Mustang. So we've gone from the uncoolest car at school to the coolest. So it's I'm living life down here at the moment.
Yeah, little old Martin's going to love that, going to school and that.
Oh, they love it. I gave them the choice this morning, actually. I said, what do you want to do? Do you want to go in the people mover or the Mustang? So my little 7-year-old girl, she loves getting in there. The other reason they love getting in there is because they're rebels. When they're in that car, they don't have to wear seatbelts.
So they're like their mother,
then. Got a car that... Well, yeah. So, of course, we wear seatbelts in cars that have seatbelts, but the 65 Mustang doesn't have it. So they love getting in there, and just the freedom of driving around one of those, you know, classic cars from the 60s.
Okay. Now, we'll let you know if the authorities are listening.
It's all legal. I can legally do it down here, mate.
Fair enough. Now, we did want, I mean, we always like to catch up with you, your family, what's going on at school. But actually, I think we should talk to you about something you know even more about, because you were working for Fox in Australia today on the MotoGP. So, first of all, tell us a little bit about, tell us what you were doing today and your thoughts, first of all, on the overall weekend.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you guys had the F1 up there just recently in Mexico next weekend with F1, but it's down in the Southern Hemisphere. It's been all about MotoGP, and the circus came to Australia a couple of weeks ago, and it's moved to Sepang this weekend, just gone. And boy, what a few races we had there. Of course, we've had a couple of world champions crowned in the last couple of weeks. Jaya Mir won in Australia, his world championship, his first world championship in the Moto3 class. And I'll tell you what, Jonathan, if he wins the final race of the year, he's going to equal Valentino Rossi's amount of wins in the minor class. So Jaya Mir's definitely got it all to play for in the Moto3 class next time out at Valencia in a couple of weeks' time. Moto2, Franco Morbidelli. I don't know if you remember him or not, but when we were doing the World Superbike commentary, he was the young kid coming through then. Well, he's now the Moto2 world champion. He didn't win on the weekend in the Moto2 class, though, because another manufacturer's finally found some form this year, the KTM. KTM have made a Moto2 bike. And for the last two race meetings in a row now, Australia and here, they got a 1-2 on the podium. So it was a massive weekend for KTM in the Moto2 class, and they look ominous for next year's championship. And then, of course, the big one was another 1-2, the MotoGP race. Dovizioso had to win to keep it alive. And you know what? It was wet. He went out and he did it, and he kept it alive. 21 points in the lead, still 25 for the win with one race to go. That means that Marquez, who finished fourth on the weekend, really just has to cruise around at Valencia. But anything can happen in these races, and, you know, the pressure's on when they head back to Europe for that final round.
You know, I'm excited to see that, but I don't know that Marquez can just cruise around. He's got to survive it. And Valencia, with its wet and wild weekends and weather that it gets there, I think that can come into play, and it may actually favor Lorenzo again.
Absolutely. It's not the first time that Valentino Rossi was up for the win at Valencia. I think it was 2006 when Nicky Hayden won the championship. All he had to do was roll around, but he fell off in turn two and handed the Nicky Hayden his world championship. So,
Valencia's that was at Valencia,
It was. So it is the sort of track. They've come from like two really open tracks, tracks very similar to the Circuit of Americas there, really wide and open. Valencia is pretty much will fit into most people's backyards, and it's a real handful on these MotoGP bikes. Remember that they're putting out more power than almost the most powerful car on the road nowadays, 260 to nearly 300 rear wheel horsepower, which is absolutely insane amounts of horsepower to be dealing with. So, it might sound easy, just get 4 points for Marc Marquez, but he could have wrapped it up in Australia. He didn't do it. He could have wrapped it up last time out, wasn't able to do it. So, perhaps that pressure might be getting to him.
It's a good question. It's a good point. I got a quick question, though, about the two Ducatis. There was a great shot as Lorenzo was overtaken on turn 15. As they came down the front straight there, you really saw the difference between the two Ducatis in their fairing. Can you kind of give us an idea of what's going on there? Why Lorenzo has this sort of almost fin-like kind of fish thing? You called it, what did you call
it? Jet fighter look.
Yeah, the Nacker duck that you'll see a lot on fighter jets, quite honestly.
What's the difference between what he and Dovi are running?
Right. Well, basically, they're allowed to homologate two different fairings. One fairing is a little bit like an F1 car, where it has wings on it that are built into the fairing to give the bike downforce. So, of course, Ducati have measured the amount of downforce. Now, Lorenzo uses the fairing that gives a lot of downforce with the funny look on it. The reason that he uses it is because he's a very front end orientated rider. He needs to be able to feel the front end, and he finds that with the extra pressure of that aero package on that Ducati, that he just gets that little bit more front end of feel. But of course, the problem with it is you don't have quite as much top end speed because you've got all that extra drag pushing the bike onto the ground. Dovizioso, on the other hand, he's more of a rear wheel steerer. Like, he's a late braker, so he brakes upright, puts a lot of pressure on the front wheel anyway without that fairing. He sort of like stops it in the middle of the corner and turns it, so he doesn't need the same sort of feel. So he goes with the old original fairing just to get a little bit more top speed advantage, and then also, of course, more acceleration.
I mean, a couple of things looking ahead, Steve. Obviously, Valencia. I mean, it's a pretty much... Are we going to take a break or what are we doing?
Yeah. Let's take a quick break because we got a lot more to talk about with Steve. But let's take a quick break. And when we come back, Steve Martin's going to tell us more about today's MotoGP race. Listen to Speed City live in Austin, Texas. Back after a quick message.
Augusta motorcycles are the epitome of Italian style, precisely crafted with a passion for two-wheel art on wheels. Ducati Austin are the only MV Augusta and Ducati factory authorized technicians in Austin, servicing all European brands. Check the Brutale Sport Naked, the most extreme essential naked bike ever. Or the Turismo Veloce 800, the first revolutionary tourer to be built by MV Augusta. Or if you want a pedigree steeped in racing, then look no further than the World Supersport winning triple F3, 675 and 800. Or go all out for the ultimate legendary F4 MV Agusta. Italian style with Texas soul. Trade-in, consignments welcome and financing available. Ducati Austin and the home of MV Agusta at 818 Breaker Lane, just east of I-35. Precision Camera and Video is the largest camera store in Texas with over 10,000 square feet and packed with all the latest manufacturer offerings. Founded in 1976 and still owned and operated by its founders Jerry and Rosemary Sullivan, Precision Camera is committed to the finest customer experience. With hand-picked products and on-hand experts, you won't find a more helpful, knowledgeable and accommodating sales staff for quality service. Come see for yourself, Precision Camera and Video, 2438 West Anderson Lane.
Dirtfish Rally School is the nation's most prestigious driving school, offering 7 days a week, year-round driver education from 15-year-olds with no driving experience to amateur racers and professional drivers. Our professional instructors never judge a student based on who they are, where they're from, or their driving background. We'll keep you and your family safe, on the road, or better, at the racetrack. Feel confident behind the wheel, no matter the situation, no matter what you've done or where you've done it or how well you've done it. We'll make you better.
Mosing Motor Cars is Texas's only authorized dealer for Superformance products. Superformance's Mark III is the only Cobra replica built under license from Carroll Shelby. There's no finer example of a Cobra around. Mosing and Superformance is your supplier for all the great race cars of history. The GT40, the Mark III Cobra, the Corvette Grand Sport, and the Shelby Cobra Daytona Coupe. Mosing Motor Cars, 2420 West Breaker Lane, online at mosingmotorcars.com. Superformance and Mosing Motor Cars. Drive yourself happy.
Talk 1370, the right choice.
Welcome back to Speed City, presented by Mosing Motor Cars.
Jonathan, you were going to ask a question of Mr. Steve Martin. Go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, Steve, are you still there?
I'm here, mate.
By the way, first and foremost, thanks for coming on. You're listening to the words of Steve Martin calling us from Australia, his home. He is, of course, a former world superbike rider and a world endurance champion with Yamaha. Steve, and of course, my best mate in motorsport, basically. So if he doesn't mind me saying so across the air.
He may not say so, but he made you smile.
Steve, looking ahead to next year, because clearly Marquez is going to win it somehow, unless he does fall off, but either way. A couple of things. How good do you think Ducati can be next year? Because now Lorenzo, effectively, with a couple of podiums, it hasn't been a good season for him, should be up to speed. Dovi, it's a breakout year for him, no doubt. And even if he doesn't win the world title, it's been a completely, you know, the joke that was Ducati of 3 years ago is no longer. But Honda is still there and Yamaha there or thereabouts. What's your thoughts on next year?
Yeah, I think that next year is going to be a very interesting year. I think Marquez is firstly and foremostly making that Honda look good, because if you look at all the other Honda runners, they're struggling. They're nowhere to be seen. I mean, in the race on the weekend, the next Honda runner down from Marquez was another 15 or 20 seconds behind. So I think Honda is sort of like being helped with Marquez's extraordinary skill at the moment. Ducati, well, you know, they're definitely on the up and up. There's some tracks that the bike works well at, But if you look at Phillip Island a week ago, there wasn't a Ducati in the top 10. So they're still a little bit up and down. But I guess if I look at the, you know, the progress over the year and of what I've seen, I've definitely seen Lorenzo come from absolutely nowhere. He's really improving. He's on the up and up. You know, he's led a lot of races. In fact, he's led probably the second. If you tally up who's led the most laps, I think it's Marquez has led the most. I think Lorenzo has led the second most laps in the year to date so far. It's hard to believe.
But yeah, that is weird. There's two ways of looking at that. That's really bad, though, isn't it? If one guy's the world champion and the other guy's nowhere.
It is bad, but I guess what you've got to look at is everybody else that's ever got on that Ducati. Okay, Dovizioso's been on there for, 15, 20 years now? I can't remember, but a hell of a long time, so he knows it intimately. But Lorenzo's got on it, and it's a completely different animal to what he's used to. Like, the Yamaha's a nimble handling bike with a really solid front end. The Ducati is a bike that you have to go into the corner, stop hard, turn, and shoot out, just like Dovizioso does. And all the other Ducati riders that ride the Ducati well ride it in that style. So unless you ride it in that style, it doesn't work. Now, Lorenzo has been slowly trying to change his style, and it's working, because now those podiums are starting to come. He's running up the front more often. He's getting better lap times in the dry conditions. So I'm pretty sure that Lorenzo... I'm not sure he's going to be able to win next year, but I reckon he's definitely going to be in the top three. It looks like he's going to finish seventh in the championship this year. But there's other guys that you need to keep an eye on. I mean, like Johann Zarco.
Yeah.
He's been on the podium the last two times. He's on the Monster Tech 3 Yamaha, the one that Colin Edwards used to ride a few years ago, if you remember. And, I mean, Zarco is just a phenomenal rider in all conditions. And in his rookie year on a MotoGP bike, he's been astounding. He's really put the factory MotoGP team to shame. We've got Vinales saying, oh, yeah, no, the bike's no good in the wet, you know. And yet Zarco can go and almost win the race and be 1.5 seconds a lap quicker every lap.
Hey,
in fact,
Steve,
Zarco finished.
I was just going to ask you about Zarco. Do you think, I mean, to me, this guy is the next... young, obviously the youngest young rider to watch, but I mean, he could be a champion. I mean, this guy's good, isn't he?
Well, I would say that he's in the box seat at the moment to sign. You know, you've got to look at Danny Pedrosa. Pedrosa's got to be on the way out. You've got to look at Yamaha at the moment. I mean, Rossi is still phenomenal, but he's getting up there, isn't he? You know, 38, 39 years old.
Yeah, good points.
Vinales isn't really... You know, he started off strong, but he's not really cutting it, I would say, if you know what I mean. Like, he's not there winning week in, week out. He's not going to step up and take Valentino Rossi's shoes like they thought he might. So I think Zarco's in the box seat at the moment. And I reckon at the end of this year, he'll be offered some sort of contract worth a lot of money, you know, millions and millions of dollars, probably $5 million contract. Which is, you know, what those top riders are getting paid.
Steve, I've got another question for you. As you know, I'm always trying to get the band back together. It seemed to be very popular last year, so I want to do it again next year, and I got another reason to do it. And when I say putting the band back together, that's you and me, buddy, in the commentary booth. Paolo Ciabatti saying that Ducati will provide Ben Spies a world superbike-level piece of equipment for the 2018 Moto America season. Your thoughts, discuss.
Well, I think that's fabulous. I'm just wondering why, you know, Ben stopped. He had a lot of injuries, and perhaps that's the reason he stopped. For him to come back 3 or 4 years, I guess it's about 3 or 4 years later now, he must have the hunger in the belly to do it. So I reckon that Ben Spies probably going to be able to have his choice of machinery. Because he's pretty much, in a way, in America on the same level as, you know, Rossi is in the world. So, I mean, Ben Spies is an ex-MotoGP rider. He's still young. The Ducatis, of course, America is a massive market for any of the motorcycle manufacturers. So it'll be a bit of a coup to get Ben on the Ducati if he can. And it's one thing to have the bike, but you've got to have that team to back it up. So it'll be interesting to see what way Ben goes. I mean, I don't know the backstory of that. I don't know if he signed and decided to go with that deal, but you've got to remember that in America he had a very close relationship with Suzuki there as well, and he won some championships with the Suzuki. He had to beat Matt Maladen to do that, of course, and that's what made him such a brilliant rider. But it's just such good news if he does come back for Moto America, because he is definitely one of the world-class riders. If he hadn't have injured himself, he probably would have been MotoGP champion by now.
Yeah, I think I agree. Steve, we want to wrap up a little bit, but I want to hear what you're doing. Tell you're out there riding, I know, as a journalist these days, as well as doing some historic races as well. But tell everybody what to ride and why.
What to ride and what? Well, you know what just rolled up in my garage.
I love the way he does that. Like, you have a garage with an oak, it just rolls up, does it? You get up in the morning and ding! Well, the bike fairy's been.
Well, actually, the bike fairy arrived today. A big truck rolled up in my driveway, and a brand new GSXR 1000 rolled out the back. Because, of course, Suzuki just won the Australian Superbike Championship here, as it did in America, Moto America. Tony Elias won there. Well, a guy called
Josh to race Waters, against him, didn't you?
Josh. Yeah, many years ago. Well, he won the Australian Superbike Championship, and of course Suzuki are very happy about that, and they're giving their GSXRs out to all the journalists and people like me to have a bit of a squirt on. So when I finished with you guys, I'm going to put my helmet on and go for a ride on my well, it's not mine, I'm just doing a test on it, on my GSXR 1000. And then actually on Wednesday, I'm going to Wakefield Park to ride the championship winning bike. So I still got, with the number one. I told him I'll ride it, but I want a big gold number one on the front. So I'm looking forward to see if I put that
gold
on.
One.
It has to be gold.
Steve Martin,
not
thanks, that I buddy. We got to go, buddy. Thank you so much. Yeah, go have fun on your motorcycles with the gold letters.
We'll send you a gold number one for the Mustang as well, if you'd like, for the top. You can be like Jukes of Hazzard in Australia.
Thanks a lot, Steve. We'll talk to you soon.
Travel safe, buddy.
See you guys.
Thanks, Stevie.
All right, well, we're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we just got a text from the man himself, Will Buxton.
Yay!
He's going to come on the show and talk a little Mexico Grand Prix and probably talk a little wrap-up of the USGP. So stay tuned to Speed City back after these messages.
Racetrack. It's where legends are born, where only the finest machines earn their reputation for innovation and dominance. Such are the nameplates you'll find at Aston Martin of Austin, Lotus of Austin, Bentley Austin, and Rolls-Royce Motorcars. Austin, exotic, iconic automobiles whose racing heritage turns everyday driving into an inspiring journey, because you're never just along for the ride. Highway 183 north of McNeil Road. Precision Camera and Video is the largest camera store in Texas, with over 10,000 square feet and packed with all the latest manufacturer offerings. Founded in 1976 and still owned and operated by its founders Jerry and Rosemary Sullivan, Precision Camera is committed to the finest customer experience. With hand-picked products and on-hand experts, you won't find a more helpful, knowledgeable and accommodating sales staff for quality service. Come see for yourself. Precision Camera and Video, 2438 West Anderson Lane.
If you've ridden motorcycles in this part of the country for long, no doubt you know of Bud's Motorcycle Shop. Bud left this world a while back, but his legendary Harley service rides on. No longer is Bud's in downtown Austin. It is now Ravel's Heavy Duty, and they've moved out by the Formula One track. You'll see all the familiar faces, so bring in your new, used, and abused. But there's no sign of shiny showroom prices. So check it out at Ravel'sHeavyDuty.com.
This is Mario Andretti, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to Speed City, presented by Mosing Motor Cars.
Welcome back to Speed City. We just had a little MotoGP discussion with Mr. Steve Martin. We're going to switch gears and go to Formula One. And you know what? I think I want to talk just a little bit about last weekend, about
Can I tell you a short story? I only have one short story in my life, you know. Okay, so
Les doesn't tell short stories, in case you know Les.
They know that already. So here was the coolest thing. We got pinged, and I hope y'all heard us broadcasting last weekend. During the Formula 4 commentary, Make-A-Wish Foundation had a family there with a young boy, Zach. And, you know, I hope you're familiar with Make-A-Wish. It's a great group. And they grant wishes to kids that are critically ill and facing some real health challenges. His wish was to commentate a race and then work in the Formula One paddock. So naturally, they bring him to us, and he gets to pop in not only to commentate a race, but sit next to Tim Crope. With the commander of the International Space Station. Yeah. How cool is that?
He got to commentate a race with Jonathan Green and an astronaut.
Yeah.
Roughly the same thing, yeah.
So if that wasn't enough.
I don't know which is more intense.
So if that
both
wasn't
of us have been out of space, that's for sure.
If that wasn't enough.
Mine mostly inside the head.
He got invited into the driver's press conference after qualifying. And he got to meet the drivers there, who actually had met Sebastian the day before. And anyway, at the end of that press conference, Lewis Hamilton grabs him and takes him to the TV bullpen for the post-qualifying bullpen. The funniest thing played out right there. So he had already told Sebastian he was his favorite driver and he was a Ferrari fan and all this kind of thing. But Lewis is taking him around. Well, these two guys, Sebastian and Lewis, wind up in the corner, same corner, doing their TV interviews to different broadcast groups. And Zach is in between them. They play up and ham up an argument. But arguing over who Zach is a bigger fan of.
Oh, that's right.
And so then Sebastian kind of waves his hand and says, fine, you can have him. And he turns his back to him. Well, poor Zach has a little quivering lip about that moment. But the funniest thing is Lewis turns with his hand on Zach's shoulder. And he's facing the camera, talking to this camera. And the next time Lewis looks back, he finds out that Sebastian had grabbed a Ferrari cap and put it on Zach. So you have to visually imagine all that happening. But it was so incredibly hilarious. And I want to thank those guys and certainly the F1 team that runs the press conferences and all that for helping us out.
Well, this is an 11-year-old boy with a critical, whatever the cases are. And it's a really amazing thing for Make-A-Wish. So, yeah, I think that little boy will... we'll never forget that. And, you know, it was interesting the fact that what she said. You knew what I was going to say, didn't you, Jonathan? How she said that when these kids have their wishes come true, that actually medically, some of them just recover. Yeah. I mean, think about that. So
it certainly progresses that.
Yeah, yeah. Their ailment or whatever it is. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing. Well, guys, we're waiting. We're trying to get hold of Will Buxton. And so... Jonathan, you know, you guys pointed out something to me that was on Channel 4 in the UK. And so we grabbed this clip. And this, obviously last week, the USGP, the big story was Max Verstappen off track limits and the violation and how that was called, whether it was consistent. I think that was the big issue most people had. Was it called consistently? Because all throughout the day. So
go ahead.
We have an audio clip that you guys thought, you and Les heard about this and saw it and said, this is a great summary of this whole issue. And so let's play this clip. It's Karun Chanduk and Channel 4, and he talks about this whole issue and summarizes it really well.
Max Verstappen's move on Kimi Raikkonen on the final lap was unquestionably the biggest talking point of the US Grand Prix.
Look how careful Raikkonen's being, trying to get the exit of the corner here. He's still going to have to fend off through the last couple of corners. Oh, Verstappen squeezes up the inside. That's remarkable. Boy, oh boy, Max Verstappen has stolen third on the last lap. What a racer. We have just learnt that a 5-second time penalty has been applied to Max Verstappen for gaining an advantage by leaving the track in that overtake on Raikkonen. And it means that he's now fourth.
The FIA rule quite clearly states that should a car leave the track, the driver may rejoin. However, this may only be done when it's safe to do so and without gaining any lasting advantage. The two key words in this whole sentence are lasting advantage. While Carlos Sainz and Valtteri Bottas both went off track during their battles and weren't penalized, Max was the only one who gained a place when he had all four wheels beyond the white lines that border the asphalt.
He had gained an advantage. He had shortened.
Awesome. Obviously, this is the way that this race was so much dependent on this. Obviously, with him landing on the podium, then coming off the podium, it was a really controversial thing. And
I know we're about to get Charlie Whiting's version of it, but I don't care about Charlie Whiting. I want to hear what Lee Diffie's got to say about it.
That's a good idea. If we could just wait, Lee Diffie.
How can we get him on the show?
Lee Diffie's on the
podium. I think he listens.
Hey, guys. Hey, how are you? Nice to be back with you.
Good, Lee. How are you doing?
Hey.
Yeah, pretty good, pretty good. I think we witnessed something pretty special today, but I guess you're still talking about Circuit of the Americas, so you steer the ship.
We want to talk about this week because we talked about last week to death a little bit. I mean, but the last thing I do want to get your take is on last week is just on what we were just talking about Max Verstappen's pass and the off track and the rules, and then we'll go into this week.
Well, look, I mean, I'm torn because. It was one of the gutsiest, you know, and exhilarating overtaking moves we've seen in quite some time. And so you never want to stifle that, right? So I thought it was awesome. Just personally, I thought it was awesome. But I also understand the rules. I've got friends, as you do too. We've got friends who are Formula One stewards. The Formula One steward who Verstappen called out, Gary Connolly, has been a friend of mine for a long time. Gary made a quick decision. But I guess when you listen to what Mika Salo said, all of the facts were presented. Gary made a very quick decision, but in the end, it was the right decision because he did have all four wheels off. I argued the point. I've had a number of discussions since then with people in positions of power that would prefer that I don't name them, and I've said, you know, come on, look, how can a decision be made this quick? And it takes us. It robs Verstappen of a podium. It was possibly the highlight of the race. And what's the deal? Well, the fact of the matter is because I use probably as you guys have too. I use the example of at turn 12 with Verstappen and Bottas.
Yeah,
they went for the corner. Bottas went outside the track limits. Came back, in my opinion, gained an advantage, but nothing was done about that. There was the Bottas Ricciardo turn one incident. Blah blah blah. So, and I was reminded of the fact that there actually are no rules about track limits, period. The rules pertain to exceeding the track limits and then gaining, and the key word is gaining a lasting advantage. That's the key thing. And so when you look at the Bottas and Verstappen thing in turn 12, Bottas was already ahead when they entered the corner. So I know for a fact that the FIA stewards deemed the fact that that was his corner. Then they would say he was pushed wide by Verstappen, exceeded the track limit, came back on to be ahead of Verstappen. Therefore, he didn't gain a lasting advantage because he was ahead when they went into the corner. And they can break it down. The stewards make the call, but Charlie Whiting has access to the same technology. They can break it down into what they call micro segments. And they look at the actual timing data and they say, well, he was, you know, 3/10 ahead here, mm-hmm. but he was only, you know, 1/10 afterwards, or he was 1/10 behind, but now he was 4/10 ahead. So therefore he gained a lasting advantage. So I think that's a whole bunch of gobbledygook and we're getting mired in the technicalities of it. I loved the pass. I thought it was incredibly ballsy. And I think to a small extent, Kimi crowded him a little bit, and Kimi forced him into that situation. So again, I'm torn between. It was an awesome move, but yet I understand a portion of the steward's standpoint. You know,
and Lee, my only take on it, and I totally agree with you 100%. Was you were commentating on it, we were commentating it for the track, and I just don't think it was a good advert for the American fans in the crowd and those watching on NBCSN when somebody's there on the podium anteroom and then is hustled out of it, because it's just not good for the sport, because it's confusing to a young American audience in a lot of ways, who are still in some ways learning it and don't understand necessarily how decisions like that are made, and it's hard for us as commentators to sort of say, sorry folks, what you just saw didn't really happen.
Yeah, and if you're trying to attract the casual viewer or the channel surfer, they've just watched a NASCAR race where you can go all four wheels below the apron, you know, and that's okay because that's part of NASCAR's rules. But, you know, in Formula One, and I agree with you, Greeny, it was very difficult and it was a little bit disappointing because, you know, as commentators, you you thrive on that kind of those kind of exhilarating moves. And yeah, it was a tough one. But you know what? For the crappy year that Verstappen's had, for the poor reliability and the crashes. today's win, you know, made everything right.
Yeah, well, you know what? Let's transition. Before we do transition, Les, I want to talk, Lee, I want to talk, Les, tell us something about last weekend that was really pretty amazing that you were a part of.
Hey, absolutely, Lee. And Will is trying to work out network issues and join us. But Lee, you were part of it. Thanks for the video to come in with the Bucks and Bash. All the trio guys joined in, and thanks for contributing.
They loved it. The crowd went nuts when they saw that video, and you were funny, mate. Good work.
Absolutely.
I made sure I had my Salt Lick hat ready, and I'm proud of myself that I kept it clean. I hear Hobo dropped an F bomb or two.
Hey, well,
we don't mind. Yeah, certainly, Will Buxton didn't mind the F bomb or two.
Well, hey, that's all right. Hey, we got your compadre, and he did get a hold of the network.
Let's put the band back together.
Let's have a party. Will Buxton, welcome to the show.
Hello.
We've got your other mucker, the one with the crazy jacket on. Lee Diffie's with us as well.
They all have crazy jackets on.
Oh, they do.
Yeah, I know. They're outdoing you on the fashion show these days.
Hey, so we just wrapped up last week's race and talked about the passing, no passing, legal or not. But it's time, and we got the right crowd here. Will, you got to tell us what the grand total was for last week's Buxton Bash.
So last count, just over 27,000.
Yeah.
So it's unbelievable, and I just can't thank everyone enough for turning out and supporting the event as much as they have over the years. I think over the 5 years we've run it, we've raised in excess of $120,000 for local charities, which is unbelievable. And you know, this year, guys, we couldn't have done it without you. You organized everything. I gave you so much hell for it, and you were just amazing. So really, thank you, because we couldn't have done it, and we couldn't have made that much money for charity without you guys putting it on. So thank you.
Well, you got it.
And we're very privileged to have both you on. We've heard you guys all day today. We've enjoyed every minute of it. Thank you so much. But again, give us your personal take. Lee first, and then Will, you know, what do you take away from today? Obviously, there was a lot going on, a hell of a race. Well called, everybody. But what's the highest moment for you?
Well, I think I love the aggression. You know, when there's so much on the line, it's always easy to soft pedal it and be conservative. I love the aggression from everybody at turn one, two, and three, lap one. You know, they were, as Lewis told Will in the post-race interview, you know, he was going to go aggressive, and he did. You know, he wasn't going to soft pedal it. Vettel went for it. Verstappen, we know Max now, and he has the skill to pull off those aggressive moves. So I thought that was terrific. But then, just big picture wise, as we ended up the day, you know, on F1 Extra, just saying, you know, I said to the boys, just think about a big picture. In the 5 years that we've had F1 on NBC, we got to see Vettel be crowned the four-time world champion, and then today we got to see Lewis Hamilton become a four-time world champion. And then, you know, you think about this in the, you know, it's become a generic phrase like Xeroxing or Hoovering. You know, when someone's driving fast or a little bit, you know, trying to be too skillful or too clever, you say, you know, who do you think you are, Fangio? Well,
yeah.
You know, right now, as we sit here, Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton are one world championship away from equaling Fangio, and then there's only Michael Schumacher ahead. So,
yeah.
I mean, we could live, you know, we've been fortunate to live and work in this era, and you know, my kids are just starting to get into it, and they may never see a Formula One driver get anywhere near these kind of numbers and records. So, I kind of take a bigger picture view of today. I loved it. I thought the whole weekend, the Mexican crowd and the flavour, and you know, doing it for the earthquake victims. You know, there were many sides to this event today, but happy for Verstappen, and then I think, you know, Hamilton. Yeah, it was good. I mean, if either of the guys had been world champion, there's great things to say about both of them. But for Lewis, he deserved it. He probably should have had this championship either last year or several years earlier. So it was right to be, and I think we're all very fortunate to witness this in the timeline of Formula One.
Yeah, well, hey, Will Buxton, you were there. You're there in Mexico. It really, I think this Grand Prix down there has turned into a huge success. Based, if nothing else, on it's a sellout every time. But I saw you. You know, you got to interview Tavo Helman, but which was, I loved what he said about you guys. We can talk about that. But also, I just want to get your take on the whole thing, too, just like Lee's.
Yeah, I agree with Lee. I think we're in a very fortunate and privileged position to watch two now four-time world champions go wheel to wheel into the future. If Fernando gets a decent engine in the back of his car next year, you know, could he enter the mix? Could we get Ricciardo and Verstappen fighting in there as well? You know, are any one of those guys going to stop Seb or Lewis taking a fifth crown next year? I think that's really exciting. You know, you get the young guys like Ocon and Verstappen who are coming through. Ocon had a great race today. One of my big takeaways from the weekend, honestly, is Brendan Hartley again.
Yes,
he's had two weekends in Formula One, and it feels like he's been there all year. He gets on with it. He's such a nice guy. He's so talented. He's so quick, and it just feels right. It just feels natural. It feels like he always should have been here. It feels like he always has been here. So that's a really nice kind of takeaway as well. There's these two guys who define their generation who are battling at the front and for the championships. And then, you know, the sort of the cast of characters that stand almost in their shadow at the moment and just waiting to burst out into the spotlight is quite incredible.
Well, you just about answered the question I was going to ask, and that was, is Hartley a legitimate contender for a seat next year?
Yes.
He's got the seat next year. Yeah. I think anybody who thinks he hasn't is crazy, because you know the great work that Marshall Pruitt did over on Racer, he found out that Hartley had signed for Ganassi for next year. The fact that Ganassi's had to sign Ed Jones, who'd also had a handshake deal for Dale Coyne for next year, you know, that tells us one thing, which is that, yeah, Hartley's going to be in Formula One next year. There's no two ways about it. And I asked Franz Tost, as you know, how did the negotiations with Chip go? And he was just like, they were long. And then he sort of laughed very awkwardly and walked off and sort of turned around and looked at me and he said, well, what else do you expect me to say? What am I supposed to say? You know why I can't talk about this. So yeah, I mean, look, they wouldn't have bussed him out of the Ganassi contract if he wasn't racing for them next year.
Yeah. I got one for both of you. I was trying to look for something else than the obvious. And to me, I mean, I love Vitaly Bottas, but what is going on? I mean, he was beaten sorely by...
Vitaly Bottas.
It may well be.
Crazy hybrid driver.
Valtteri Bottas. But what is going on? I mean, you know, he should have the same equipment as Lewis. Lewis is flying through the field, Vettel's flying through the field, and he can't catch up with Verstappen.
Lee, you want to take that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, definitely whatever's happened, there, as much as there's been a line in the sand with Lewis Hamilton between prior to the summer break and after the summer break, I think there's equally been in the opposite direction, the line in the sand for Bottas. And whatever's changed, if there has been obviously subtle changes with the car that's made it he's finding it more difficult to get it into the sweet spot. And, you know, we're talking about a guy who's still finished on the podium, but he did get waxed by Verstappen today. But I think there's another thing that's happening too, is that, and it's the same for anybody who comes up against, you know, a world champion as your teammate, you actually get a window into seeing just how good they are. And Bottas has had a front row view of just how good Lewis Hamilton is. And that, on top of struggling to get the tyres into the operating window, the optimum operating window, into the pressure of trying to deliver and having to deliver in the first season, on top of being a pole sitter and being a multi-time race winner and then not even getting close again. I mean, there's been a lot of compounding factors on that guy. So I think there'll be two trains of thought today. Happy that he got on the podium, but then realizing he got on the podium because the top two guys in the championship were at the back end of the field, and he got hosed by a Red Bull to the tune of 20 seconds. So, I don't know.
On that, I think the really interesting thing this weekend was that the Mercedes was the third best car. So actually, Valtteri bringing it home second is actually a pretty good result. And you know, and he demolished Kimi in the process. So I think we expect to see the Mercedes up front and winning everything. And when it doesn't, we question, well, you know, is it the driver? And there's two things here. Lewis, you know, Toto has said numerous occasions over the last few weeks, he's never seen Lewis as good as he is right now. So Valtteri's coming up against Lewis Hamilton that's never been better. Mm-hmm. His achievements, therefore, I think are sort of put in the shadow by that. But what he did today, I thought, was pretty good. He put a car second that had no right to be there, because the Ferrari and the Red Bull showed all weekend that they were the cars to beat. So yeah, I think he had a good day, but that's the difficulty for Bottas's season. As Lee said, you know, he's done brilliantly. He's won his first Grand Prix, multiple Grand Prix this year, but he's going to come out massively in the shadow of Lewis because Lewis has had such an exceptional year.
Yeah, one of the best of all time at the top of his game, like you're saying, Lewis Hamilton. But hey, Lee Diffie, I know you said you just had about 10 minutes with us. You need to go. No problem at all. We got to take a break too. So if you can stick with us, great, both of you guys. But I know, Will, you're in the car driving. So, Lee, is that all you got time for us?
That's all I've got, guys. And I'll be happy to be back on the show anytime. But if it doesn't happen before the end of the season, I want to say thanks for what you guys do on a regular basis, not only in the lead up to the US Grand Prix in Austin, but for what you do week in, week out for the sport we love and,
you know,
for all of your viewers. So thanks,
back at
guys.
You.
Yeah, but Lee, and, you know, you guys, having you guys on NBC has been really amazing, I think, for America, like Tavo said today. But you guys are the best of the best. You know, that we say Formula One drivers are the pinnacle of their game and they're in this motorsports world, and you guys are too. And we really appreciate both of what you guys have done and whatever happens next year. But thank you guys both.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Well, thanks, Lee. Will, if you can stay.
Yeah, Lee, we're going to...
Yeah, I've got about another 10 minutes before we get back to the hotel.
Well, great. Cool. We're going to take about a two-minute break and we'll be back with Will Buxton.
Travel safe, Lee.
Precision Camera and Video is the largest camera store in Texas with over 10,000 square feet and packed with all the latest manufacturer offerings. Founded in 1976 and still owned and operated by its founders Jerry and Rosemary Sullivan, Precision Camera is committed to the finest customer experience. With hand-picked products and on-hand experts, you won't find a more helpful, knowledgeable, and accommodating sales staff for quality service. Come see for yourself, Precision Camera and Video, 2438 West Anderson Lane. MV Agusta motorcycles are the epitome of Italian style, precisely crafted with a passion for two-wheel art on wheels. Ducati Austin are the only MV Agusta and Ducati factory authorized technicians in Austin, servicing all European brands. Check the Brutale Sport Naked, the most extreme essential naked bike ever. Or the Turismo Veloce 800, the first revolutionary tourer to be built by MV Agusta. Or if you want a pedigree steeped in racing, then look no further than the World Supersport winning triple F3, 675 and 800. Or go all out for the ultimate legendary F4 MV Agusta. Italian style with Texas soul. Trade-in, consignments welcome and financing available. Ducati Austin and the home of MV Agusta at 818 Breaker Lane, just east of I-35. Dirtfish Rally School is the nation's most prestigious driving school, offering 7 days a week, year-round driver education from 15-year-olds with no driving experience to amateur racers and professional drivers. Our professional instructors never judge a student based on who they are, where they're from, or their driving background. We'll keep you and your family safe, on the road, or better, at the racetrack. Feel confident behind the wheel, no matter the situation, no matter what you've done, or where you've done it, or how well you've done it. We'll make you better.
Mosing Motor Cars is Central Texas's source for classic performance cars. British, German, Italian, Japanese, and American. Ready for that special car you've always dreamed of? Mosing has you covered. Looking to sell a classic? Let Mosing handle all the details and get that special vehicle in the hands of the right buyer. Visit the showroom at 2420 West Breaker Lane or call 512-821-9491 or browse the garage online at mosingmotorcars.com. Mosing Motor Cars. Drive yourself happy.
You've made the right choice. Talk 1370.
Hi, I'm Andre De Vistoso, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to Speed City, presented by Mosing Motor Cars.
That was Andrea Divizioso.
Andre.
He's winner.
He had a good day.
Hey, yeah, so we are live with Will Buxton. He's in the car after today's race. And Will, I want to ask you a question. Next one for me, and that would be our friend, our smiling friend, everybody's favorite guy in the Formula One driver's parade of Daniel Ricciardo. You were the first one to get to interview him today. I want to ask you, what do you think? I mean, kind of leads off Jonathan's question about Botas, about how what Botas is he could he be doing better with the hardware that he's got? So do you think Ricardo could end up at either Mercedes or Ferrari next year?
Well, not next year.
Not next year. 2019. I think right now Daniel's in the pound seats for the Mercedes seat. Lewis said some very complimentary things about him over the weekend, and he said it would be a privilege to race alongside him. You know, I said he's one of the most talented guys out there, and I think it would be wonderful to see Daniel alongside Lewis. I think there'd be a good scrap for that seat between Ricciardo and Ocon for the 2019 Mercedes seat alongside Lewis, if indeed Lewis, you know, is still there and doesn't hang his helmet up. Daniel's doing it all right. He always extracts the maximum from the car. He's a hard and fair racer. He's a joy to be around. He would be a great ambassador for Mercedes. And as Daniel himself said over the weekend, you know, look, Max has taken himself out of the driver market now, which actually makes my life a bit easier because, you know, it's one less guy to worry about.
Yeah, it's true.
That's a good point.
Hey, so what about today? What about Mexico? I mean, obviously with Tavo Hellman getting us started here in Austin, we follow Mexico very close. I saw you got to interview Tavo today. What's your take on the Mexican Grand Prix overall?
Love it. Absolutely love it. Love Mexico City. Love the track. Love the people. Love the food. Everything about it's amazing. Don't love the tequila so much in the morning, but it's amazing. Went to see Paul McCartney last night.
What?
Incredible. The Estadio Azteca was unbelievable.
Wow.
And he still rocks it, doesn't he? He still rocks it.
Yeah, he still rocks it. He's 75 years old. He still rocks it. He's been touring since 1962. And he doesn't stop. He's amazing. It was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. Just phenomenal. So, you know, and that's something that the organizers helped me. It wasn't part of McCartney's tour. And the organizers said, look, you know, can you come and do a concert over the Grand Prix weekend? And Macca was like, yeah, all right, cool. So it came part of the F1 Fiesta, and it was just brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. You know, again, this year, I think it was 135,000. No, was it 135,000 today at the track? Yeah, 135,000.
On race day,
So, on race day. So over 335,000 for the weekend.
Incredible.
More than last year, more than the year before. They keep going up. And it's just every year it gets bigger and more colorful and more noisy. And it's, you know, and the pre-race today, you know, Austin had his own, you know, pre-race with Buffer. And today the pre-race was all Dia de los Muertos and was just amazing. It had this wonderful, you know, very unique, very local flavor, and it's great. And I love tacos, so you know, it was good.
Yeah, when I went to Mexico City a few years ago, it was before the race even happened. You could tell it was a big Formula One city already before they even had the race. So it was big. But well, guys,
it's huge. And I got to do the Carrera Panamericana a stage of it earlier this year, and that's where Mexico's love of motor racing really began. So there's a real heart, there's a real love for motorsport.
Well, we're out of time, Will. I'm sorry, I hate to say it, Will, but we are out of time. I appreciate you coming on the show, Will Buxton.
Will, thanks again for what you've done with the community of Austin with the
Great
Buxton Bash. Let's do this again.
Well, I'm an Austinite, you know that. I'm sort of an honorary citizen, so you know my heart's there. And listen, I just want to echo what Lee said. Thanks for all you guys do, in promoting the sport, and not just for American Grand Prix week, but throughout the season. And,
awesome.
Yeah, it's massively appreciated, guys.
Thanks a lot, Will.
Thanks, Will.
Talk to you soon.
Travel safe, buddy.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.